good evening and welcome to the NFL Draft. Tonight, we officially welcome the next generation of players. So if you're ready, are you ready? Let's get it started. The NFL Draft is officially open.
Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sikkema. With me is Benjamin Solak on a Fan Friday edition of the podcast. Very, very excited for this Fan Friday, which is brought to you by our good friends over at Pepsi, who want to remind us, and I think this is very kind of them to remind us, because I sometimes, you know, lose sight of it, that thanks to the lack of natural athleticism, fewer than 1% of the 1% of the 1% of people will ever play professional sports. Hey, we're in that. Me and Ben are in that. They're talking to us. But instead of entering the NFL, they, us included, have joined another league. The League of Football Watchers. That's us. He's talking about us again. They're talking about us. That's what we're doing. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day. No matter how you watch, Pepsi is the refreshment that you need to power through any game day, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Again, that's us. That's me and you. That's me and you, the co-host. Ben,
what?
Friday, we got all 22.
Fans.
We made it to the end of the week. How do we feel, my friend?
Everything is delicious. I appreciate you asking. We got good film to watch, which is also exciting to see.
Indeed.
Very happy to see it. Trevor opened the pre-show with me when we logged on to record the podcast with. Ben, I don't know if you've watched Jamal Adams against the Falcons. But he's good.
Dude.
Yeah, brother.
I thought the price tag that Jamal Adams commanded to get him from the Jets over to Seattle, and it was a high price that Seattle paid for him, but the dude is just all over the field. Paying for a safety, it's tough because sometimes they're so far away from the play, they can't make as much of an impact as you would want them to. That's not Jamal Adams. Jamal Adams knows where the ball is going at all times, and he'll even go off script in ways that you don't even think of, which is what makes him a truly elite player. And I was just going over his tape, and I'm like, man, this is going to be such a fun matchup between Adams, linebacker Bobby Wagner, and what the Seahawks are going to try to do this week to neutralize Cam Newton. I couldn't contain it. I was jazzed about it. So, yeah, I mentioned it to Ben.
Adams, there's Hopkins, there's a lot of guys, like new locations had great performances, but like I'd be lying to you if I said the guy I'm looking forward to watching the most is like an Adams or Hopkins. I want to go see what Brian Burns did. I want to go see what Chase Winovich did. I can't wait to watch the Jesse Bates film. Like, I don't know. Every year, I always just am so excited to see what young guys have taken the next step. You know what I mean? That's
Bates,
to me, the most fun part.
Also had a fantastic day. My man was owning single high space. He was showing off the range, so I'm excited for you to get to that. I haven't taken a deep dive into it. I've just seen the clips that have been passed around the timeline from guys who have gotten to it before me, but I'm very interested to hear what you think, because I've seen not just good things, like incredible things, game plan changing things from how Jesse Bates played in week one. We got a lot to talk about because you guys have a lot of questions. It's Fan Friday, which means you guys are taking over the show. We're going to go about an hour long taking your questions, which could have to do with football, could have to do with literally anything else. Yes, not football. It's Ask Me Anything. Y'all kill it as you do every week, and there's a good mix of both on-topic things and off-topic things. We start off with Steven, who gives us a football question. He said, if the Colts were picking in the top 10, are they also looking for a new head coach? I love Reich, but I also love winning, he says. I wonder if
that's
this
true.
Stems from the fact that after the Sunday night game. No. This was after the Monday night games, I think. After the Monday night games, I posted what would have been, hey, if the draft were this weekend after week one and the Colts were one of those teams that were picking in the top 10, I had them in a fun, random, spontaneous mock draft taking Trey Lance in the top 10, because that's probably what they would do since Phillip Rivers is old and if they played that badly. But if the Colts really fall on their face this much, is Reich done?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Yeah. Reich is about as respected as it gets in terms of the motivation that he brings and the leadership that he brings, not to even mention what I think he does as an offensive designer, which in concert with Nick Sirianni is good. They build a good offense there. I think when you look at the Colts, they were an 8-8 team last year, 7-9 maybe, but they're around 500. Lose Brissett and add in Rivers, and let's say they're bad. Picking well,
they
top
take, 10. They still have Brissett.
Sure, I'm saying like that's the major change that was made between 2019 to 2020.
Right.
Was Brissett was replaced by Rivers. If they're bad, 5-11 is usually what we're looking at. 6-10 if you're picking at 10 overall. The big change that was made was not, you know, like Reich started doing anything poorly or losing the locker room or whatever. It was the quarterback. If they're bad, it's likely because Rivers is done. Rivers is at the capacity of his arm talent,
yeah,
you know, and,
yeah,
and he's just as limited in that way. I think when you sit down as an owner with Reich and you say like, oh man, like, you know, it's back-to-back losing seasons. Like, what's the deal? Reich's answer is probably going to be the deal is Andrew Luck retired. And we're trying to figure out what to do. You know what I mean? Like, the deal is we had our franchise quarterback and we lost him in a heartbeat. And we tried it with Brissett and we tried it with Rivers. And we're top 10. We have a good amount of future capital. We have a ton of cap space. Either we need to make a play for Dak Prescott or we need to go draft ourselves a young quarterback. Because I think that with Brissett and with Rivers, assuming, again, they're top 10, it'll be clear that Reich hasn't gotten a chance with a legit QB yet. Mm-hmm. And as such, I think his job will be quite safe.
I agree with you. I don't think he's going anywhere, even if it's a very disappointing season in the form of finishing in the top 10. ADP, our boy, said, rank your five favorite foods starting with the letter F. This came from me saying in the Twitter question of like, hey, this is Fan Friday. Ask your questions below. I said, ask me anything is in full effect, so give us your questions about football, food, films, festival, finance, and other words that start with the letter F. So thank you. Thank you, ADP, for
wondering, recognizing
the theme. And he said, rank your favorite food items starting with the letter F.
I cheated probably a little bit.
Wow, shocked.
Five, French toast. Four, fries.
If you put pho or pho in there because it's a PH, I'm going to fight you.
No, but pho is really good. Three, fondue. Technically a food? Not really. More like a style. Still very good.
All right, I'll let you get away with it because fondue is delicious.
Number two, fried chicken. I feel like fried chicken is enough of like a category in and of itself.
I didn't even think of fried chicken.
I mean? Right, like so, you do like fried a lot of things. Okay. And I also did fries, which are fried potatoes.
Right.
But like, I really like fried chicken. You know, like,
of course. Yeah. Sure.
Number one is feta. Feta cheese is the bomb. There is
nothing. I don't have feta on here. I should.
Nothing that is not improved by feta cheese. My go-to pizza order's got like feta on it and it gets toasted. That's the move, brother.
Man. Yeah. I should have thought of feta. Feta's a good one.
You're out here being like, oh, of course you cheated. Meanwhile, my list is perfect. It is flawless.
Nah, number five, it wasn't flawless because it didn't have this one on here. Fig Newtons, baby. Fig Newtons. Number five.
Fig Newtons are an average cookie.
Cool. Imagine telling young Trevor that and not getting slapped. Four, I've got fettuccine. Throwing a little carbs in there. Pasta. Three, just to spite my co-host, I've got fresh fruit, baby. Number three, the F foods. Two, I've got fish. I'm from Florida. Big on seafood. Really love some fresh seafood. So I've got
the
fish
thing
at number
is, like,
two.
All the ways that I like fish have other names. Like, I love sushi and sashimi, which are not fish. They're sushi and sashimi. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Like, you got to go to a great seafood place that's giving you fresh fish and a chef that knows what they're doing and knows how to cook it. And that is a top tier.
I can't believe you put fresh fruit just to be annoying.
Number one, though, I have frites, which are different than fries because of how they're cooked.
It's a good one.
And frites are, as somebody who has been to Belgium, very subtle flex, I can tell you that frites and how they do it over there, it's top tier. It's a different category. I promise you it is. John said, which draft busts did you overrate the most? Which stars did you underrate the most? Between Trevor and Ben, who has the worst mistake?
Right. It's always tricky. You know what I mean? Because there's, you know, what is a bust, what's overrating, what's underrating. Like, as this podcast has heard me say, you know, and talk about 1,000 times, I always get bothered by, like, talking about ordinal rankings relative to team fit, whatever. But
yeah, of course.
I was big on Akeem Butler. I had Akeem Butler as I think a fringe top 20 player.
That was both of us really liked Akeem Butler.
Butler is most recently stands out to me as one of my bad misses, and I don't know, he just landed with the Panthers. I'm excited to see what the Panthers do with him, but obviously, you know, to not really take any significant snaps for the Cardinals, a team which puts a lot of wide receivers on the field, and then get cut in year two is a dangerous thing. Players that are good that I was busts, and then what, stars that I missed out on?
You just underappreciated, you just were not high enough on them going into the league. I'll give you time
Darius
to think.
Leonard?
Okay, yeah, Leonard's a big. Leonard's a pretty
big one. I was very strongly in the. I mean, yeah, sure, maybe we get there by year three, but there's a ton of work to be done. And then he was an All-Pro in year one. Yeah, you're an idiot.
He was awesome. Yeah, awesome.
I think it's interesting because with Butler, I was like, these measurables are tough to argue with. It's gonna be hard not to produce at this size with this speed. Could his hands be better? Yeah. Could his route running be better? Yeah. But we're gonna work on that. We'll get there. When you got a guy who's 6'5 with vines, 230, and he runs a sub 4.5, that's a player you want on the football field. So what he brings to the offense.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you know, whether it was chalkboard stuff, classroom stuff, or literally on-field consistency with the hands, you know, thinking about Dorial Green Beckham and kind of what his career was like, you just couldn't justify giving him targets over guys who certainly didn't have his measurables but were far more consistent. With Leonard, it was in spite of the height, weight, length, speed, in spite of the very things that made me believe and buy into Akeem Butler, I watched the South Carolina State film and just said, I do not understand how this guy's going to be able to read and trigger against the run in the NFL. Now, he ends up in Indianapolis, and I think that it is the number one perfect spot for him because of the way they play pass coverage and the way they let him play a little bit deeper. He sinks a lot, and then he rallies up. A lot of his tackle numbers, I think, are a testament to his speed, a testament to his tackle radius, but also a testament to how that defense works. But at the same time, I mean, he's got a much better trigger than I gave him credit for. And so it's interesting because one guy I overvalued because of the measurables, and the other dude I undervalued how his measurables would help him out.
Solomon Thomas, I'm not ready to call him a bust, but him going number three overall, certainly, and having the production that he's had, I understand that it's a crowded defensive line. It's kind of like, okay, you either keep up or the guys around you are just going to get more attention, more stats, and they're going to shine more than you. But I thought Solomon Thomas coming out of Stanford, I thought his best stuff was inside. I thought that his best stuff came from him being a smaller defensive tackle. And I remember going over this with John Ledyard on the podcast back, this is, you know, three years ago. And John was telling me, he's like, dude, he's not big enough. You can't play him at three tech. And I'm like, yeah, but he wins at three tech. You've got to be able to put a guy where he wins, because if not, then you're already dooming his skill set if you just play him at defensive end. And I feel like that's what they've done. They've played Solomon Thomas at defensive end. And I'm not going to lie here. It's not like I've watched every single snap of Solomon Thomas, but I feel like a lot of the inability to have success, there's been a lot that's been going on with him personally as well, but the inability to really show up on those flash plays at Stanford was, I thought a lot of the best stuff was coming inside. Let him one gap, let him just be more athletic on the interior. And John was kind of just telling me, he's just not big enough, they can't play him there. And I'm like, well, if they don't throw a little bit of weight on him and allow him to play there, then I don't really like his skill set. So for what his skill set was, I had faith in Solomon Thomas, but he hadn't really been played in the right spot. Nathan Shepard's another guy. I had Nathan Shepard as a top 15 player.
Oh, Nate Shepard.
And I watched Nathan Shepard's film at Fort Hays State, which is a D2 school. This is before the 2018 draft, right? 2018? 2019? 2018,
yeah.
I think. And just a dominant. I mean, just a truly a man amongst boys. And was just throwing people to the wind the whole time. And then I was like, okay, yeah, but it's Fort Hays State tape, right? Gets to the Senior Bowl, abuses all of the interior offensive linemen were there before he ended up getting hurt midway through day two and couldn't participate the rest of the week. But he was dumb throwing these people to the wayside. And I was like, that's it. He is going to win in the NFL because this dude is just that freaky strong. And I thought he moved well. He had great size. Thought he was built fantastically. I was so glad that he got to the Senior Bowl. He's just has not had the impact. He's needed more than that strength, and he just hasn't put it on. Yeah, I had him top 15. VH3, I think everybody was kind of, really high on VH3 when he was coming out. And Vernon.
Go Gators.
I think loved a lot of other things that weren't football. He just was not as big into the football part of his young adult life than some other people are. Some of these guys in the NFL eat, sleep, breathe football. That just wasn't Vern. He had other interests, and I think, unfortunately, that shows up on tape. He's a talented kid, but I think that part shows up on tape. Last guy, Obi Melifonwu. I like Melifonwu. I think
I was right on Obi. I was good on Obi.
I had him as a top 50, top 60 guy. He was in the 2017 draft, and he's out of the league. Like he's not even anywhere. He's a free agent. So I had a lot of faith for his size, athleticism, ability to play on the back end as a safety, and it definitely did not work out. Guys, I was not as high on as I probably should have been. Of course, Lamar is one of them. Even though I wasn't a hater on Lamar, like I thought there was a definite reality where Lamar could have really succeeded in the NFL. I wasn't like holding him back or anything, but I just clearly was not as much of a believer as I should have been. Patrick Mahomes is another one. I like Mahomes. I loved his arm. I was like, man, get him with a great coach. But I guess, of course, I should have been a little bit higher on him. Two other guys who aren't as obvious is like Lamar and Mahomes. TJ Watt, I just wasn't as high on. Like, I thought TJ was good, but I thought he was going to be a solid player in the NFL. I didn't think that he was going to be this incredible defensive piece that's almost a defensive player of the year kind of category. So I didn't think that. And then Eddie Jackson,
that
too.
Pick against Jones where he just peeled off the rush and just snagged it. Yeah, man. You don't teach that nonsense.
No, his brains to the game are amazing, but he's a Watt. Yep. So, you know, that's the whole family there. So there you go. There's a couple of mine. KG said, who is the one college prospect that you think could immediately help an NFL team? Like a player who would be on an NFL team's roster tomorrow and really help them out. Doesn't have to be based on like current draft need or projection or anything. Just strictly based off ability, who would you like to see where?
So just like, oh, right. So just like a luxury position.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Like I have one of mine, I have Penei Sewell being on Tampa. You know, like putting Penei Sewell as a left tackle for Tampa, I think would be great. You could just plug him in, get Donovan Smith out of there. Another one is Jamar Chase in the 49ers. They need a wide receiver that they can heavy go to. And like those were the two that came to my mind immediately.
Right. So yeah, the ones that I have Micah Parsons down to the Saints.
Parsons and DeMario Davis?
If the Saints have a weakness, it's linebacker two, which is such a dumb statement. And Michael Parsons next to DeMario Davis would just be absurd.
Yeah.
Plus what it gives you, Zach Bond and Parsons can both rush. So like you can do some wacky blitz stuff and have a good time.
Yeah.
So I have that one down. You said Jamar Chase to the Niners. I said Caleb Farley to the Niners. I talked about corner two being an issue for San Francisco. Yeah. Meanwhile, Farley is perfect height, weight, length for what they like, and Sherman's on IR. They need a corner one. And to me, Caleb Farley is a guy who may not be pro ready in a lot of places, but in San Francisco with what they asked their corners to do, he could translate fairly quickly. And then I wanted to sit down and get Trevor Lawrence somewhere where I truly believed, a team where I was like, if they have a quarterback, they're going to compete.
Mm-hmm.
So I put him in Cleveland.
Oh, yeah. Man, we're gonna get to a Baker question. We're going to get to Baker. Yeah. Actually, I'm going to accelerate that, and we're going to do the Baker question next. But
transition!
But first, guys,
we
were almost there. Visa knows the local businesses are the heartbeat of our community, whether they're our corner stores, coffee shops, favorite places to shop. Local businesses have always been there for us. They remember our orders, who we are, our personalities. They're our friends. They call us by name. Always giving back, making a difference, going the extra mile to support us and our community. Right now, more than ever, local businesses, they need our support. So now it's time for us to return the favor to them. Next time you go shopping, make the choice to shop at a local business and look for the contactless symbol. Ben? Don't be afraid of it. And tap to pay with your contactless Visa to help support your community. Because where and how you shop absolutely matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be, official partners of the NFL. Okay, I want to make sure I get this right here because we were going to do the Baker question, but this is a great transition. So Ryan asked this. He said, how would you fix Baker Mayfield? He looked like a shell of himself. And then he also asked, what's the hottest food that you've ever had, and how was it? So let's stick with the Mayfield one, and then we'll move on to the hot food after this.
What happened to Mayfield? I'll be honest with you. Like, I don't know. I haven't sat down. I'm looking at clips. He just looks extremely gun-shy. Clips on the timeline, I should say. You know, things going on Twitter. It just looks like he doesn't know what to trigger on, when to trigger on it. He doesn't trust his receivers. He doesn't trust himself. He doesn't trust his line. Something in the chain is broken. I had Mayfield as a late one. I had a clear top two quarterbacks in that class, which to me were Rosen and Lamar. Hit on 50% of that. Don't mind the other 50%. And then I had Baker as a late one. I had Darnold as a two, and I had Allen way, way, way down. Baker was a late one for me because what you had at Oklahoma was a point-and-shoot quarterback. And there's nothing wrong with being a point-and-shoot quarterback. But when you are looking at a prospect, you want there to be more than that, right? And with Mayfield, the physical toolkit in terms of arm strength, which was fine but not elite, movement skills, which was fine but not elite, you know, performance under pressure, which was fine but not elite, led you to believe that there wasn't a huge ceiling for this guy beyond being a point-and-shoot quarterback who's executing a system, working with spread, whatever, right? And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. When I talk about quarterbacks, I've said this on the pod before, I like to ask the question, would I take him top or like, you know, top five pick or not? And with Baker, I would have. He was a late one grade for me, but he was worthy of that early pick, in my opinion. So what we usually don't see happen, you know, you might talk about Jared Goff as an analogous player here. Goff has not become more than a point-and-shoot quarterback. But he's good at it, and he's got a system that works for him. And they made it to the Super Bowl with that. Is Goff elevating that team? No, but he keeps them on schedule, and he can throw a pretty ball at times. What you usually don't see happen is that point-and-shoot guy losing that ability. Whatever it was that emboldened Mayfield to say, I can just throw this one-step drop, RPO slant, open for 8 yards all the time, he lost in 2019. Something in the chain of trusting the offensive line, trusting the receiver, trusting himself, trusting the coaching staff, whatever it was, there's a dam. There's something that's stopping the flow. Mm-hmm. And that's your first thing. Because since Mayfield's not elevating anything, like he's not Wentz. Wentz has last year lost that trust in his receiving core. We saw that. Wentz lost trust in his offensive line. It's why he's holding the ball for 10,000 years, right? It's why he's trying to make a massive play out of everything. But Wentz still has playmaking ability. Mayfield doesn't have it the same way Wentz does. And so the first thing you have to do with a player in Mayfield's shoes, which again, I don't think is a usual situation where Mayfield currently is you've got to settle him back down. You've got to roll back the 201 class and go back to 101. You know, it's time for easy concepts. It's time for half field reads. Let's build the foundation again, because he's constantly overextending himself, Mayfield is. And you got to get him back down to basics.
Yeah.
And that may not mean you win some games. But if it saves your quarterback, if it gets his confidence back, if it gets his sea legs back under him, you're going to start moving the ball later in the year. And, okay, you don't make the playoffs, whatever. But, like, you'll have a future here. Whereas if he just keeps trying to deep shot 15-yard outs on, you know, third and 12, and that's how the offense is going to run, mm-hmm. you're screwed both ways anyway.
Right.
So to me, you know, first year with Kevin Stefanski, ran, this is from PFF, Seth Galina, Stefanski ran two play action passes off of outside zone in week one after running 15 outside zone runs. It's the bad stuff without the good stuff. It's the hard work without the easy stuff that comes after it. So you got to simplify. You got to start running easy. Like, you know, like Jared Goff, man, boot weak flood off of a wide zone. They've made so much money off of that freaking little flat route off of split zone. Like, that's just, it's easy. It's pitch and catch, and it moves the sticks.
Yeah.
Let's go back to basics with Mayfield.
Yeah. Mark Schofield, who is a good friend of the pod, he posted a couple of clips on Friday morning, and he talked about Baker bailing from clean pockets. And it's just, it highlights there's something going on in the back of his head, because I also saw a couple of other clips, because a lot of people were going through Mayfield's film when the All-22 dropped. There's just open guys in simple timing routes that have separation that he's basically looking at. Like, he's already looking on that side of the field, and he's not pulling the trigger. So you've got to find a way for him to get out of his own head. Now, I'm not exactly sure how long this has been a thing, because I know that he really struggled last year and people were pointing that out. I didn't get a chance to really sit down and go over Baker Mayfield. I know you did. You did his contextualized quarterbacking, right, from last season. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, you've seen a lot more than I have, but it just, there are times where, and I remember this is a thing at Oklahoma, right? We loved Baker Mayfield's highs at Oklahoma because I felt like we believed that Mayfield was this incredible off-script kind of quarterback. You know, like when things broke down or when he got out of the pocket, he was dynamic. He could complete deep passes when he was outside the tackles. And we all noted that as like, look how good Mayfield can be off-script. But if you're not as good, if not better, on-script, then that becomes a problem. You start almost like seeing ghosts or however you want to say it for Mayfield. But I agree with you. We've got to get to the point where he's comfortable in a pocket. We've got to get to the point where when he sees a timing route, he knows how to hit it. Because right now, it's just I don't know what he's looking at or I don't know what he's looking for. But it's really become detrimental to the team. And it's becoming even more than that, detrimental to his progress and his seat as the franchise quarterback. Like now we're kind of after a terrible week one. This dude's really got to bounce back after last year. He's got to have a better season this season. And, man, he's got a lot of things he's got to work on. He's got to get better with on-platform stuff because right now he's just – he's trigger shy. He's trying to bail. I don't know if, like, what you said there, they got to start designing things where – like LA does with Jared Goff, they're getting him into design rollouts where he's designed on the move. Maybe that's how you get his confidence up a little bit and you work back into making him more comfortable in the pocket. But he just does not look like a guy who's ready to pull the trigger, no hesitation, isn't playing with any reservation. And when you've got a quarterback that's got doubt in the back of their mind, you're not going to win. You're just not going to win. The league's too good. Right, the defenses are too fast. If you have any reservation at all, which it looks like Baker Mayfield has too much reservation, whether it's clock in the back of his head with pressure, when to release the ball, where DBs are going to be, it's just not a winning formula. He's got to figure it out. He's got to settle down. He's got to get out of his own head. What about the hottest food that you have ever tried?
When I was like, oh, man, 11, 12, 10?
Okay.
Something?
This is, yeah, all right.
I was with my cousins in Georgia, and there was we went to this barbecue place, and there was a big, humongous shelf, big upside down triangle series of shelves on the wall, and the top of the wall was like the top of the shelves was like the least hot sauce, and then at the bottom there was just one hot sauce right at the bottom corner of the triangle.
Sure, of course.
And the whole point was that you would go and you would
get
choose
it, the whole point
you would choose which one you wanted from the top shelf, and then you would get like fried chicken, I think, or something like that with that sauce, and then you would progressively go down the shelf, down the shelf, down the shelf, down the shelf, and the goal was to get as far as you wanted to. And because I was like a 12-year-old boy, I was like, well, it really doesn't matter if I can't feel anything at the end of this. I'm getting to the bottom of the shelf. And I got to the third from the bottom shelf, which was a ghost pepper sauce.
Okay.
Before I started throwing up outside. And
you
then
threw
I
up?
Was,
you threw up?
I was 12. I should have given up ages ago. I was in so much pain. And my sister and my cousin Zach, shout out Zach, were both just egging me on so much. And I was like, this is for pride. And then I felt horrible for the next like 24 hours. It was terrible. But yeah.
Okay.
And since then, I've been a little bit of a coward.
Sure. I like spicy food. I do, but I don't have a super high tolerance for it. Like, I like the spicy foods, but I'm not going to – I can't try, like, you know, like the death sauces and things like that. I have before, and that's kind of where my story is here. Back – oh, man. How old was I? Probably like 22. I was like 22, 23. Had just come home from college. And every Thursday, me and a couple of buddies would go to Buffalo Wild Wings. And this is when they had a really, really good deal on boneless wings. It was like, no joke, like 35-cent boneless wings. I know that they've raised the price a bunch since then, but it was a deal. So we would go every single Thursday during the summer after work. And we were just like, we were veterans, you know, like we would order the mango habanero, we'd order the hot barbecue, and we'd put them down. They would come up with different sauces for the week or for the month or whatever. And one month it was ghost chili.
I thought you meant for the weak and for the strong. I thought was what you were going to say. And I was about to be like, whoa.
No, they had a ghost chili pepper sauce, and we all one week were like, all right, we're getting it. Let's do it. We each had one wing, and we went never, ever again. That is the most miserable I have been eating one singular chicken wing. But I also have another quick story that I want to tell that didn't involve me eating wings. But down in Sarasota, Florida, anybody who might be listening to this podcast, if you're a Bucks fan and you're listening to this and you've been down to Sarasota, Florida, there is a hole-in-the-wall restaurant that is only open late at night. It is called Munchies 420. Yes, that is what the establishment is called.
That's a subtle title there, Chief.
You get some crazy kinds of foods. You know, like it's like a giant hoagie with cheeseburgers on it, mac and cheese, tater tots. You know, like it's all kinds of just like crazy food. But they were featured on Food Network for their hot wings, which are called the Fire in Your Hole Challenge. And you've got to eat 10 of these wings. Adam Richman couldn't do it. He ate two wings. He's the man. He's the old man versus food guy. He ate two wings and he quit.
Oh.
I watched, while we were there one time, I watched this like 63-year-old woman order this challenge. And we're like, this lady's going to die. We are going to watch.
We have to go to the funeral.
Her die.
We're going to be pallbearers.
So, of course, we stuck around, got our recorders out, and recorded it. She champs these wings. Downs 8 out of the 10. And then after the 8th wing, she's very calm the whole time. Just puts the wings down and goes, I can't finish. And we're like, lady, we've never seen anybody do this challenge before. What do you mean you can't finish? You're hitting these like a champ. And she's like, I can't do it. My stomach just hurts too bad. Like, I'm in too much pain right now. I can't do it because of how hot it is. And she's like, yeah, I'm done. So there's two wings left and they're sitting there. And after somebody orders this challenge, and if they don't complete it and they have wings left on the table, they go, hey, does anybody else want to just try the wings? You can try the wings. You've got to sign the waiver and everything. You won't get your name on the wall for all 10, but like, if you want to try one, we'll give you one.
Get a feel for it, right?
One of my friends in the group goes, well, since none of you wussies are going to do it, and he didn't use the word wussy, he used a different word. You could use your imagination.
Bad friends.
He walks up to the wings, and my other friend immediately just starts laughing, pulls out his iPhone, and hits record. My friend takes two bites of these wings, is knocked back so far, he walks out of the building and immediately pukes in the alley while my friend follows him about 2 feet away from his face, continuing to scream, laugh, and record
right.
him
offers
as
zero help.
He is puking. So, yeah, there we go. That's that was a little bit of a long story, but there you go. That's a couple of hot food stories that I have here. Kyle said, is there a better duo in the NFL? Sorry, Dreds duo in the NFL than Larry Fitzgerald and Nuke Hopkins?
I feel like we got this question when he was first traded there, right?
Maybe.
Like, because it's very difficult to think. Okay. Current NFL, like.
I've got some. So, Dont'a Hightower and Stephon Gilmore, I think, is a great combo. I don't know receiver combo. Like, that's the best receiver combo. Fitz and Nuke are the best receiver combo. But I got Hightower and Gilmore. Marshawn Lynch and Richard Sherman back with the Seahawks.
Right, that's the first people that came to mind, but I was like, Marshawn Lynch still isn't there.
And then if Jason Verrett has dread still, he is currently on a team with Richard Sherman.
He does have dreads, I think. I'm pretty sure in the most recent photo.
So those
I saw
are some those dreads. Are some those are some two good looking dreads there. It's the same position. So I feel like those are some good combos.
Right. I think the thing is the best set of dreads in the league, period, is I think Larry Fitz. Like, that's the most iconic.
Yeah, they are iconic. You're right.
Right, exactly. So accordingly, I'm inclined to say it's them just on the power of Fitz alone. I'm gonna keep thinking about it though.
Okay. All right.
Does anybody in Atlanta got good dreads? Because Gurley's got good dreads.
Julio Jones used to have dreads.
Yeah. Jalen Hurts, man.
Those are the days, dude.
Hurts used to have great hair.
Alabama, right. When Julio had the dreads?
Yeah.
That was it.
That was a vibe.
Joe at work asked, based on what we saw in week one against the Vikings, I'm wondering if you guys ever watched film of Mississippi State center Elgton Jenkins and thought, yeah, that guy could be a right tackle.
No.
I never thought of him as a right tackle. I really didn't.
I liked Elgton a fair bit. I'm pretty sure I had him as a clear round two value. Liked the pick when the Packers made it. Big invest in the line sort of a guy. He's always been flexible, and he's always played with good leverage, despite the fact that he is not the shortest dude ever, right? Like, he's not like a short, squatty interior offensive lineman. He's always, you know, he's 6'4", 310. Like, that's, you know, That's a lot of your interior offensive linemen are a little shorter than that. And then obviously the arm length is the big thing for him, right? He's got 34 inch arms.
Yeah.
So that's, it's a tackly sort of a build, and he's always been able to play low on the inside. So it's not like it gave him a problem. So I can understand why he's there, and I can understand why he's capable there. I don't think he'll be a better tackle than he will be an interior guy, but good ball player. You know what I mean? So like if you have a guy who starts on the inside for you and kick out to tackle, that gives you so much versatility in the starting fives you can put out in the event of injury. So that's a great boon to have. I just don't think Elton's going to be their long-term tackle.
He was great last year on the interior, though. I mean, he's just a good offensive lineman. We often talk about, like, changing different sides of the position. Well, can't this left tackle play right, or can this guard play center? And you never know exactly how a transition is going to be. It's not nearly as easy as just changing a label in Madden, but sometimes these guys are just kind of, like, naturally gifted. Like, they're good offensive linemen. Yeah, it's a little bit different. You're going to have to learn some different things. You're going to have to learn better technique, but some guys are just great old linemen. And I think that Elton, like you said, his build is not something that's going to be detrimental to him filling in at right tackle, and then they can kick it back inside if they ever get somebody else that they have faith in that they could put out there. So I instead just think, hey, Packers got a heck of an offensive lineman here that they could use in a variety of different spots. Never a bad thing. That's like the way that Ali Marpet was for the Bucs. You know, Marpet started at tackle. He started all three spots at interior as well. He's just a damn good offensive lineman.
Right. And the thing is, like, there's like footwork and there's sets and there's angles. And, like, you know, having a background at guard can help you understand some stuff at tackle in terms of how you can best pass protect as a unit, but you also still need to be able to do the technique. The other thing is, like, the mental aspect of it. Like, things happen so much faster at a guard or on an interior Russians, whereas tackle, you are inclined to play with more patience. So, like, there's, like, play style and decision-making differences that, man, like, if you have a guy who can legit play guard and play tackle, like, true all-four-spot swing ability at a starter level, respect. That takes a lot mentally and physically. So, big ups, Elton.
Big respect. Seth asked, do the 49ers have the best three linebackers, Warner, Greenlaw, and Alexander? He said, yes, I listed Greenlaw before Alexander on purpose. He might be better already in the NFL. Also, why is the answer yes? Do they have the best linebacker group in the NFL?
So I think you put Seattle in the conversation.
I would say that Seattle is better. Yes.
I agree. Oh, would you?
Yeah, just because of experience, if nothing else. Like, I like Alexander. I think that Alexander is good, but I just kind of think that he's, like, solid. And I think Wagner's a better linebacker than Warner. I think that KJ is still a better linebacker right now than Greenlaw, even though I think that Greenlaw is awesome. And then if you take a third linebacker from Seattle, I think that they could be comparable to what Alexander gives you as a athletic, fast, kind of like run defender, energy player. So I would say that Seattle still has the edge on the 49ers, but I love the linebacker group. I love all three of these guys for what they are.
Yeah. So I think we have Seattle. I will not rank Dallas above them. I think Vander Esch and Jalen Smith are both not the players that are, like, they don't play at their peaks. People remember them at their peaks, and they don't play at their peaks. Obviously, Vander Esch injured as well. I think you put Minnesota in the conversation. Eric Kendricks, Anthony Barr.
Sure.
I think you put, not Indy, maybe Houston, Cunningham, McKinney.
Tampa has Devin White and Levante.
Yeah,
but
I was thinking Tampa, and the thing is, like, I heard Devin White was incredible. I just haven't watched his.
He was really good, but I mean, like, he's still, like, young too. You know, like, there were some ups and downs with Devin White. He's not there yet, I don't think, with these guys. But I would say Seattle, and other than that, you got a conversation about a lot of other groups in the NFL.
I agree. I think it's Seattle. I think San Francisco is a strong case for number two, but Seattle is the team that's clearly their biggest impediment to being ranked number one, in my opinion.
Javal said, what will it take for Ben to buy a LaVisca Chenault jersey? If he does, it better be a teal one.
Yep. All right. So I have decided.
Oh, okay.
Oh, absolutely. I don't like jerseys. I don't look good in jerseys. Like, the only people who look good in jerseys are people who look like they might have at some point worn a jersey. And I don't look like I ever at any point wore a jersey. So it's like, oh, look at a teenage boy in a jersey.
Like, what if you just like started doing steroids? And just like got hella jacked.
That's a very, Trevor, I never thought about that.
And like I was literally stunned by that question.
I was like, all right, clever response. And my head was just like, we have none. We aren't prepared.
No, you know what? I want to envision us turning this into a video podcast. Like before we hit record, you're sitting there with your Tupperware chicken, just like getting huge. And you've got the pump on with the biceps because you just did biceps for 45 straight minutes. That's the future that I need. I need to absolutely roid it out, Solak.
I think that I've said this before, like, I would be so uncomfortable if I were jacked. I don't think I'd like it. I think I would look weird. Does everybody feel that way before they get jacked, though?
No. No. Well, maybe.
I don't know. Like,
depends who your goals are.
I feel like if like I were jacked and then I was out here being like, oh, hootenanny, stupid expressions, weird noises, people would be like, why you're jacked? Well, you don't have to be an idiot. Like, my personality matches with like, all right, a little bit of a tummy, like no muscles. And like, that's just my vibe. I'm like, I feel like otherwise there'd be some cognitive dissonance. Anyway, the moral of the story is this. I will buy the Viska Chenault's jersey under three conditions. If any are met, I will purchase it. One.
Okay, let's hear it.
Offensive rookie of the year.
All right.
Two. Over 10 total touchdowns.
Okay.
It's three. Tough. Over 1,000 total yards, rushing and receiving.
We could do that one.
Yeah. Which, I mean, if he hits like the second two, he has a good chance hitting the first.
Yeah.
But those are them. And then the fourth condition is just if he has a really good season, and I feel like it'll also buy one because he's good. But that's people hold me to that. We'll watch LaVisca as he plays. Hopefully he's really good. I'd be so happy if he's really good. I love him so much.
All right, yeah. People in the premium Slack and allies of the podcast, remember this. At the end of the year, if Viska hits any of these thresholds, remember, especially Javal, you asked the question, so you got to call us on it. I know you're really active asking questions all the time, so I know that you're gonna make sure that he does it. Mark said, I know that I've asked this question before, so I really wanted to get it in. Make your perfect golf foursome, folks, with one current NFL head coach, one current college coach, and one retired Hall of Fame coach.
So I don't play golf. I don't have no interest in playing golf either. So I figured I would just people that I want to hang out with, and then I wouldn't really care if it would be... we would be good at golf or not. I don't really know what makes a good golfer. So my college head coach was the immediate and the most easy decision, which is Ed Orgeron.
Okay. All right.
The absolute man. For my Hall of Fame coach, I ended up going with Bill Cowher. I was raised by a Pittsburgh fan, and Bill's always like, you know, I just feel like he's a very prototypical coach. I feel like he'd be fun to talk to about the history of the game. I feel like he'd also would enjoy Ed Orgeron. They'd have a good vibe together. I struggled with current head coach. There were a lot of guys that I debated and I walked through. I landed on Andy Reid. I grew up on Andy, and obviously he was the Eagles coach for much of my childhood. And then also, like him, Orgeron, just, you know, be good vibes.
I hate that because me and you have basically the same exact list.
You have Orgeron and Andy?
Yeah, I have Andy Reid. I have Ed Orgeron. And I didn't see the Hall of Fame part, so I just picked a retired coach, and I just have Wade Phillips. And the reason why is because...
Wade Phillips is probably going to be a Hall of Famer at some point.
Right, right. And I think that, one, I could probably beat all of them at golf. So...
that'd be important.
I'm coming away victorious. Two, I think those guys are going to keep it light because they're not going to keep it that serious because they know they're probably not that good at golf anyway, so it's going to be a fun outing. Like, these dudes are going to be shotgunning beers probably by the fourth hole. And the most important part at the end is when we get done with 18 holes, these dudes aren't bolting. They're going to be like, all right, where are we eating? What are we doing at the country club, or are we going to the steakhouse? What are we doing here, boys?
Right, I feel like we would play like four holes, and then we'd be like, all right, let's go get food. Yeah. You know what I mean? I think
right,
that's it.
Right, right. And there's just some, I think, four good food opinions there between Wade, Andy, and Coach O. Christian said, how would you rank these players coming out of Memphis? Tony Pollard, Kenneth Gainwell, Daryl Henderson, and Antonio Gibson. So I took this as like what I thought of them going into the NFL, not right now. Yes. And that is, I have Henderson at one, Gibson at two, Pollard at three, Gainwell at four.
Yeah, so Gainwell is a tricky one because I didn't like him on summer scouting. And there's a chance that I'll watch him again and I'll feel like I'll like him better than I did. But for me, it goes, and I believe this was your exact order, Henderson 1, Gibson 2,
yeah,
Pollard 3, Gainwell 4. Now, Henderson is my one. Obviously, Henderson, man's got to get healthy and play in Los Angeles. It's very tough right now to be a Daryl Henderson guy. And I had him 49 overall, and I'm pretty sure there were people who were a lot higher on him than that, if memory serves. But still, like, I thought he was going to come out and be a good player, and he just has not been able to stay healthy and not been able to hold down that starting job. And it's disappointing to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. CF said, top five restaurants / fast food places based off of their sweet tea.
Yes. This is a question I've been preparing my entire life for.
Okay.
By which I mean to say, I've had like two down south fast food chain sweet teas, and they're both amazing, and then I haven't had the rest of them. So I'm probably going to extremely piss some people off with this.
Okay.
But number five is Burger King. It's not good. It's basically sugar, and it's okay.
Number five is Burger King. It's not good.
No, it's not. But like, we're talking like legit sweet tea, right? Like, I don't want to like get a place called like that calls it iced tea. You know,
no, I mean, if you're drinking, yeah, Lipton, we'll fight. On site.
Four is Sonic. Sonic's is actually good. Sweet tea. That's solid as it goes.
Okay.
Three is Zaxby's. Zaxby's sweet tea is like, that's the first one where you're like, all right, this is South sweet tea. This is legit. Number two for me is probably Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A sweet tea is really, really good. And I know that it's not like, that's like a national chain still, but like, they do it right. Number one by a mile is Bojangles. Bojangles sweet tea. I had Bojangles for the first time in an airport flying back from Joe's wedding in North Carolina.
Yes.
And I think I got three sweet teas, and then I had to get up and pee on the airplane like five times. But I just kept on getting more food and getting more sweet tea because Bojangles in the airport was lit. It was so good. I've had Bojangles like three times now.
You know, your list is pretty good. It is. You did good here. As a Northerner, you did good. Five, I have McAllister's Deli.
Okay. Is that a chain or a local place?
No, it's a chain. It's not like a fast food. I wouldn't call it like a fast food place, but I do think that they have surprisingly under the radar good sweet tea. Four is Zaxby's. Zaxby's, I also really like their sweet tea. Three is, in fact, Chick-fil-A.
Yep, good. I was worried I was going to get yelled at for that one, but it's
nope.
Good.
Chick-fil-A sweet tea is great. You fill that bad boy the entire way up with ice, throw some sweet tea in there, and just enjoy the refreshment. Number two is Bojangles, but number one is McDonald's.
No.
You missed it.
McDonald's and Arby's is literally simple syrup. It's not tea. It has no tea taste whatsoever.
No.
Have you ever had Arby's sweet tea?
Sweet tea is awesome.
No, it's not.
Ben,
I'll drink it because I love tea.
I cannot tell you genuinely the last time I had Arby's. It may have been when I was like 11. We might be going on near two decades since I had Arby's.
No. And listen, I agree with you. There's no reason to have Arby's. That's not a thing you want to do. That's a horrible decision to make. Arby's sweet tea is like, it's like you have to chew it. It's so sugary. You have to like physically like break down the kernels of sugar itself. It is disgusting. And McDonald's is two steps below it.
My friend Mark asked, what's the goat food scene in movie history?
I struggled with this one. I'll be honest with you. I Googled for a bit. I'm going to land on Spaghetti Dinner, Lady and the Tramp. I truly believe it is the most iconic food movie scene ever. Think about this. Any other food movie scene in the entire world does not get imitated the way the Lady and the Tramp one does, right? Like, that's what it is, an actual reference point. Like, versus like, if you're like, oh, that one time in Breakfast Club where they had lunch, people are like, what are you talking about? The Lady and the Tramp spaghetti scene is like it is in the public, you know, ethos. Like, they think about it. It is there. So I think it's the most iconic scene.
The correct answer is at the end of the first Harold and Kumar movie, when they finally get to White Castle and they order 10,000 calories of food.
You cannot, a Harold and Kumar food scene is not, this is the most iconic.
Somebody tell me I'm wrong. Ben, the movie is literally called Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. And then at the end of the movie, do you know what they do? They get to White Castle.
Right, but it's not, you can't say it's iconic when,
this
like,
isn't called Lady and the Tramp eat one singular piece of spaghetti. That's not
Lady
the name of the movie.
Every kid watches Lady and the Tramp, though. That's what I'm saying. It's like an actual icon versus Harold and Kumar's just like a movie that happens to be about food.
Yeah.
No.
And then they eat the food. Have you ever, side note, gone on YouTube and watched somebody try to eat all of the food that Harold and Kumar both order?
No, but I don't want to.
It is, I think, about 10,000 calories worth of food.
The worst subculture of YouTube is people eating weird things. No, why do people think this is funny?
Don't.
There's the one guy who just, like, eats toothpaste and cement, and people are like, this is great. Y'all are nuts. What are you talking about?
Have you ever seen How to Basic videos?
No, I don't know what that is.
So it's kind of like the title of the video will be how to make an apple pie or something. And then for the next like 10 minutes, this guy will throw a bunch of eggs like at his kitchen wall and then like take his dog's poop and then just like smear it all over the sink. And then he'll get completely naked and roll around in olive oil. And then like at the end of the episode, he will like pop out like an apple pie and it'll just be like there and it'll be normal. And it's called How to Basic. And he does this with a million things. He has an unbelievable size of subscribers and he's filthy rich just for doing like insane stuff like this.
It's like arbitrary. So I get that it's funny in that way, but it's really not funny.
You're just a hater, man.
I'm a hater, apparently.
Five hypothetical matchups between current NFL players and former NFL players that you would love to see.
I landed on three, and then I couldn't choose my last two.
Okay, I got four. I got four.
Go for it.
All right. These are not ranked in any order. What was the order that they gave as an example? Or what was the example they had?
Gilmore against Moss, I think.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, that'd be a nice one. That'd be fun. I have Ray Lewis meeting Marshawn Lynch at the line of scrimmage.
Mm-hmm.
That's one I would love to see. Get Champ Bailey versus Julio Jones. I have the 0-2 Bucks defense against Lamar Jackson. I'd love to see that because the Bucks were really one of the first teams that put out the blueprint of how to neutralize and stop Michael Vick. And I know that it's a different game. You know, it's almost 20 years later at this point, 15 years later. But I would love to see Monty Kiffin and that Bucks defense and how they went up against Lamar Jackson, just how they planned for him and everything with Warren Sapp there in the middle. And Derek Brooks, especially at the linebacker level, just see how they would do it. Because I've heard so much and I've watched so much film about them stopping Michael Vick. And then the fourth one that I thought of late that I really, really liked. Deion versus Tyreek Hill.
Oh, I have Deion, but it's not Tyreek.
I would love to see Prime go up against Tyreek. That would be fun as hell for me. All right, who are you guys?
My Deion one is against Michael Thomas because I feel like that would get so messy and so like a lot of unsportsmanlike conduct.
Yeah, they
penalties.
Just yell at each other the whole time.
Exactly. Like I feel like the best. Like I tweeted this during week one, but like I love how much Marshawn Lattimore and Mike Evans hate each other. I love it.
Yeah, it's awesome. You know,
Obviously, like, we're not in the 80s anymore. It's not like just, like, teams hate other teams. And, like, once you're drafted to a team, you never leave. And, like, the players in the league all know each other so much more now to the point where it's, like, rivalries aren't what they used to be. And I'm fine with that. Like, I'm not, like you know, like, my dad being like, but, you know, whatever. That being said, the one place where rivalries remain is in, like, wide receiver versus corner matchups.
Yeah.
That's just the one place where they still hate each other enough. And with Evans and Lattimore, two players who think – I mean, Evan's probably going to be on Tampa for about forever, and Lattimore's probably going to be on New Orleans for about forever. For them to hate each other the way they do is awesome. So I would want Deion versus Michael Thomas. I wrote Ed Reed against Patrick Mahomes.
Okay.
Ed Reed being
all right.
The best free safety ever, and also like a tremendous, you know, oh, you think I'm going to be here, but I'm not going to be here, fool you, manipulate the quarterback sort of a guy versus Mahomes, who just the whole field is always available to him. So like it'd be interesting to see kind of how Reed would play it. And then this one doesn't actually count, but I don't care. I want Vic on one offense and Lamar on the other. Hmm. I want to see it. Hmm. I want to see it so bad. I want 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. The score is 68-63, and it's just these guys going just completely bananas, and just watching them as a pass, as passers and as runners. And obviously they're not like on the field at the same time, but it would just be, it would be such a cool matchup just to see how that affected everything.
Not a question, but somebody just said blue cheese is literally mold. Could not agree more. Could not agree more, Kevin.
It's good mold, brother.
Dennis said top five pub games.
Yes. Okay. For a second, I thought it was like PUBG, and I was like, there's only one.
What are your top five pub games?
So I think, right. So for five, I have like any sort of like the have you ever been to the bars where they have like actual decks of cards for like drinking games that need cards?
Yes, there are a couple here in Charlotte that have, like, we played Card Against Humanity doing that.
Right. Yeah, that's
so that was fun.
Right. So that's that. Four for me is Jenga. I've gone to bars where they have like giant Jenga too, which is really fun because people who are drunk playing like supersized Jenga.
Oh, giant Jenga is great. Yeah,
exactly. So that's a good time. Three is darts. Fun. Way too dangerous. I'm also bad at it. Two is shuffleboard. One by far is pool. As a guy who doesn't drink, pool is the best because it takes the longest period of time and is interesting for the longest period of time. So when it's 1 a.m. and you're bored and you just want your friends to give up and go home, you just play pool and you against yourself. Not, it's not that sad. It's a little sad, but like you're just waiting for them all to turn it in. Pool is the go-to because it burns time and it's interesting.
I didn't have them written down, so I'm going off the top of my head. Darts is five. For me, whenever I'm ordering them here, I think darts is fun, but it's more like, ooh, look at the danger. We're throwing pointy things more than it is actually like super
right,
enjoyable.
Yes. Nobody knows how to actually score darts.
Like, I do.
I have no idea. That's thing. We're always like, oh, just aim for the bullseye. It's like, okay.
No, you got to get three of a certain number and then you cap off a number and you've got to hit, you got to hit all of them.
Oh, okay. Now I understand.
Card games would be next for me, at number four. Pool is three, two is shuffleboard, and then number one, if they have it, cornhole. Like, that's not in every bar. That's more of in like a rooftop bar, a bar that's right. Got like an outdoor area. But like, if you got cornhole, to me, that's a great drinking game. Beer in one hand, throwing some bags in the other. I think that's a great time. It's a great night.
Yeah. That sounds like a where I live thing for bars have cornhole in it, as they would call it here, bags. I said cornhole once
bags.
At a church thing, and people were like, "What game is that?" I was like, "It's the game that's over there." And they were like, "Bags," and I was like, "That's not even a word."
All right, last question. Now I lost it. Got to give me a second. All right. Oh, Jonah asked this one. The entire state of New York, so the best all-star team between the Bills, the Giants, and the Jets versus the Kansas City Chiefs, who wins?
Oh, I didn't see this one. Okay, wait, let me think through it real quick then. Bills, Giants, Jets, he said?
Yeah.
Okay, so who do you want, Daniel Jones or Josh Allen?
Josh Allen.
Okay, so Josh Allen, Saquon Barkley, Darius Slayton, Stephon Diggs, John Brown?
Stephon Diggs, John Brown. Yes.
I mean, maybe Sterling Shepard, Golden Tate? Evan Ingram, and then you got, oh man, offensive line is going to be, oh no, Bill's offensive line is good.
Yeah, Bill's offensive line.
Cody Ford, Deion Dawkins, a tackle, get Will Hernandez.
Do we get Will Hernandez in there?
Yeah, get Will Hernandez a guard. He's good enough, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah. I mean, they technically have Cody Ford at guard, so you put him there, get either Nate Solder, Andrew Thomas, maybe Darrell Williams. Center is probably Mitch Morse. Okay, defense. Leonard Williams, Ed Oliver, Jerry Hughes.
Ed Oliver.
There's no edge rushers. Oh, God, there's no edge rushers. Mario
Who's
Addison.
Getting Bills, to Mahomes?
The Bills have Mario Addison. Okay. So Mario Addison, Leonard Williams. Okay. Linebacker will be good. Tremaine Edmonds, CJ Mosley. Matt Milano.
Yep.
Corner, Trey White, James Bradbury.
Yep.
Logan Ryan at nickel/safety.
Wait. They have Logan Ryan?
Yeah, he's on the Giants now.
Yeah. That's an easy one.
Oh, and safety's lit. Freaking Marcus May, Micah Hyde. Okay, we're taking three safeties.
Jordan
we're
thinking
Poyer. Marcus May, Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jabril Peppers, you're good, but it doesn't matter.
Do they beat the Chiefs?
Chiefs are winning by 20.
Yeah, no, I agree. We just went through that whole thing and we didn't even get to...
Nope.
We didn't even get to pick.
We got Josh Allen throwing to basically the Bills receivers behind basically the Bills offensive line. So, yeah, Chiefs are winning by 20.
Ooh, hate to see it. Guys, this season, get football on your time with NFL Game Pass. You can catch every snap from every game with full replays, and you can see all of the plays in just 45 minutes with their condensed game feature. You can relive all the gutsy calls, all the crazy catches, the wild comebacks, the breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action and all the football that you can handle in one place. And NFL Game Pass is the only place where you can replay every single game all season long. You're also going to learn from the league's best players with over 40, count them, 40 NFL Game Pass film session episodes. You can go inside the game from a player's perspective, which is always useful and informative towards knowing the game a little bit better. You're going to be learning from guys like Deshaun Watson, Stephon Gilmore, Devontae Adams, many, many more throughout all positions of the NFL. NFL Game Pass also provides access to the entire NFL films library, all those throwback shows that you enjoy. Go to NFL.com/Game Pass to start your free trial today. NFL Game Pass, where football never stops. This podcast never stops, too. We're going to actually keep recording. The show's never going to end.
Next question.
It's just a 24/7 show. Can you imagine that? Like, if we like hit the button, we were like, okay, this is our YouTube live, and people would just like watch us at our computer do our work and then like sometimes do the podcast. It just never ended. It's a continuous live stream.
And then we upload it into the stream, into the podcast feed. And it's just, hey, Fan Friday, Trevor and Ben, duration, 24 hours.
Well, the 24 hour pod, God, people would unsubscribe so fast. I feel like people can barely even handle an hour of us. 24 would be too much. Guys,
for a later day.
We have got a jam-packed week of football coming up. We did not talk about the Thursday night football game because as Ben and I are recording this, it hasn't happened yet. We're recording this on Thursday afternoon. This is kind of the schedule of things. And so I'm excited to see Joe Burrow versus the Cleveland Browns. I could be eating my words saying that after the podcast is going to come out when the game's already over. So maybe it was terrible. Maybe it sucked. And if it did, you could just remember that portion of me saying, wow, what a stinker that was. Thursday night football. Why don't they just take Thursday night football and do two Monday night games? Wait, how do you feel about that idea before we get out of here?
No, I like Thursday night football.
I did
when
too.
I realized I on Tuesday that there was football in 2 days, I was so happy.
Yeah, and it's great.
They should have Thursday night football, Wednesday night football, Friday night football.
Okay, calm down.
Saturday
night. No, calm down.
I miss the Mac, baby.
I just don't like the Monday night football game starting at 10:15. Like, we got to calm down.
That was rough. Yes, you know. Absolutely. I was watching Stephen Gostkowski miss kicks at 1:15 a.m. Yeah. I did not enjoy that. I don't like the double Monday night football.
Some of us are trying to wake up at 5:30 a.m. Start the day well. That doesn't go well with the Monday night.
Couldn't be me.
Ben and I will be back with you on Monday morning to recap, yes, the Thursday night football game, but also all of the action happening on Sunday. Very excited about that. There's a lot of really great matchups that we're looking forward to. There's also a lot of teams that could potentially be reaching that 0-2 platform, which all but seals their fate this season. Ben and I are going to be back with you at the top of the week to talk about it all. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.